from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
It's good to have you back, Ben.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Running the turn of the knobs, making the lights dance. Here's the question I have for you. So here's what we're going to do today. I got a question from the show I was not at. I listened back to it, and I came across with, I think, multiple questions. But there's one key one I wanted to focus on.
I can't be held accountable for anything I
said. No, it was you specifically. I'm glad we came back to it.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, no, this is Boova. But you two did not do anything about what Boova said. And
crap. What did I do?
Now we're all in.
Yeah, everybody's right. In trouble. Also, we were talking before the show around, what was the phrase, Mike?
Heart addiction.
Heart addictions. And so, like, the question was around, substituting things that are problematic in your life with other behaviors. And in what situations does that make sense? And then what situations is the substitution not getting at the root issue? And because it's really more of like a heart addiction. So we're going to talk through that just a little bit and see if we can't help provide some guidance in that area. And then we're going to do some advice on Dear Live from the Path, and we're going to let you go. You don't know this, but it's beast hot in here.
Rough.
Like, there's a bunch of us sweaty fellers, and it's not great. And I brought hot coffee, and there's all kinds of mistakes in this room. And so we're going to keep life moving, and we're going to let you go about your
why don't we have some fancy video that starts us out that tells people to subscribe and like and stuff, like all the other places do?
It's a good question.
Sometimes they have really long ones, and I get out because I don't even know what the video was anymore because they're like going down a train or
something.
Maybe we should not do it.
You guys think that I could pull off like an Andre the Giant type outfit?
I'm pretty sure you could not.
With the one,
just no.
With you the one,
one in my office.
What's that thing even called?
A leotard?
No, but it's only got one strap.
It's a barbarian singlet.
I'm going to tell you this.
That sounds right.
You could have said up to, I think, 100 or so costumes, and I think Dan might have one.
My wife was Buttercup, and I was Andre the Giant.
And you borrowed a barbarian singlet.
Did you really do that?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
100%.
You are the Brute Squad.
Yes. You can't unsee whatever that was.
You brought it on, Andre.
I'm just asking if you think I could pull it off.
No. Let's find out.
No, I don't think so.
Oh. That dude could slam like 40 beers in a single sitting.
I don't care about that. Okay, here's the question. Here's the question.
Why are we measuring people that way?
I've never heard anyone measured that way.
It's a really famous story about him.
Yeah, hi, my name's Jim. How many beers can you slam in one sitting, Jim? We only talk in one currency.
Go ahead, Ben.
Here's what I'm going to retry out the phrase. I don't care about that. Oh. Okay.
Lost control.
So last week,
You
guys were talking about stuff I think it's getting rid of things that Christians believe that aren't in the scriptures. Was that it?
It was a theological marvel.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was.
I don't know why we attempted that.
The question was, and I should find...
That was like 2 weeks ago.
I'm trying to... because we didn't have a show last week.
I can't remember anything.
So I sent something to the complaint line, and I said...
of course.
So what's interesting...
You're reading your own submission to the complaint line?
I'm trying to remember what it is I was complaining about.
It's more impressive if you didn't say it was you.
Okay. So what's interesting about the conversation on last week's show around the tithe is there was a pretty consistent theme of you should tithe and God will bless you. Test him in this. He provided for Israel. Okay, these are things that you guys were talking about last week.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so my question is, but there are people dying of starvation all over the world. And so how do you reconcile or provide additional context to the conversation that you had on the show to either properly understand blessing and or address situations where faithfulness in giving and generosity may have existed, but there's no commensurate provision of basic needs?
Because why would you write it in a way that only you could understand it when you read it?
That's what I was thinking.
You knew you were talking to just us, and you wrote it in a bloviated giant word tone for your own self to read.
If you said that in a different accent, I probably would have got it.
Okay. So
just read the last sentence again.
Let's see. How do you reconcile or provide additional context to the conversation that you had on the show to either properly understand blessing? Because you were talking about like, hey, you're giving and God will bless you.
Yep.
Test me in this. Check the storehouses. Okay. Or so like, do I understand blessing correctly that how could people who are do not appear blessed, does it mean all of them are unfaithful? Or how do you address situations where faithfulness in giving and generosity may have existed, but there is not a commensurate or similar ultimate provision of basic needs?
Yeah.
Because it didn't come up. All it sounded was like, you tithe, God blesses. Test me in this.
We
did it for Israel.
That?
You guys did.
We were agreeing with all that?
Yes.
Brother Booba?
I stand by my words.
Test me in this.
Whatever they were.
I mean,
are you disagreeing that that's what was said?
No, I'm not disagreeing with that was said. I'm asking, how do I understand that? Like, are we saying that like all people who are in impoverished states must be unfaithful in their generosity?
If they just tithe, they'd be better off. The homeless would not be homeless if they just tithed.
I think
you're drawing a connection that we didn't.
No, I'm asking you. You did not provide it. There was no additional discussion around that particular point.
It's because I don't think that was any on any of our minds to even be a part of the discussion, because I don't think most people would draw that conclusion.
None of us think that.
Oh, no, actually, I don't. I think a lot of people would draw that conclusion. It's a common complaint with our understanding of, as a matter of fact, it's pretty common around the prosperity gospel. Like, that's one of the core tenets of you give, God blesses.
You see that in the most poverty-stricken areas of Zimbabwe. These people on the side of the road would follow in some little prophet dude saying, all you got to do is give me one of your goats.
Right.
And they will.
Right.
And they think they'll get blessed, and they, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So that's the question is, how should I think about that?
Well, I don't think that's the same thing, first off.
Well, tell me how.
Calm it down there. I don't know why he need to snap. Like, I'm getting there.
Reading my Facebook. He's angry.
Apparently, we all are. I would say that just to kind of comment on that piece, Dan, like the concept of somebody saying, hey, give to me and then God will bless you is different than God promising blessings when you give.
We were looking at it from that angle.
What was his in the first place.
Yeah.
And so like that commandment, as far as I understand, wasn't even to anyone outside of the Jewish community. Like, it wasn't to anyone but the Israelites. I don't think God's saying across the board, all the people in the world that are impoverished mean that they are not faithful to God. I don't think that's the same conversation.
I think Ben's saying that we spoke to it as if that was true.
As if everyone's a believer, and why aren't they giving?
Like that as we did not make the distinction that conversation was between God and the nation of Israel.
Yeah.
Well, as a matter of fact, most of your conversation, like it did not say that it was between God and the nation of Israel. It was about the current tithe, and like that was the response. Like, God will bless you. Test him in this. Like, it was applied to broadly. So that's why I'm asking.
And fair enough. And then to flip that continually, then I would say that like God doesn't say, and then you are on your own if you don't tithe. Like that's not the other side of that coin. I think he was offering a command to his people that this is what they were supposed to do, is they were supposed to do this for the entire time. It was meant to be a faithfulness to him because it's a trust in him thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the context of what's happening here. I think we miss the point when we understand, or when we don't understand, that like the tithe is not meant to be God saying, I need resources because I don't have enough. Mm-hmm. The concept there is God saying, you are to give to me this part because it's part of you trusting in your relationship with me. And if you trust me to do these kind of things and to use this to take care of my people, because a lot of the situations with the tithe were don't harvest the edges of your field, right? Like that's for the wayfarers and the poor that are walking past. Like that's for them to be able to use. Mm-hmm. These are resources of mine that I'm allowing you to have in this moment, whether it's because of it's the land that I gave you through my provision of a governmental and societal structure, or whether it's the job that you have that you've been given because of what I've allowed you to have, whether it's the skills that I gave you or the circumstances you're in. Whatever it is, it's mine all the time. What I'm telling you is, in my command, trust me so that you can be a part of these works that bless and love on other people that don't have as much as you have or don't have anything in those situations. And it's part of the relationship that you have with me to trust me for all of your needs completely. And then you can see that I will bless you in these kind of things. And I think that we've talked a couple times in this conversation of blessing. Actually, probably within the last month and a half, we've had a couple conversations on this concept of blessing. And I think, Ben, you said, and Mike, you and I talked about the concept that like blessing seems to be like most of the time in land or like just his provision of being your God and like you being able to be called his child or his person, you know, his community or
land,
his
land offspring and presence. Those are the clear blessings.
Right, yes. Yeah. And so I think fair, if we were talking from a perspective that made it seem like if you tithe, then you will get more money in your coffers, or if you tithe, then you will never be scared of poverty, or if you tithe, then you will be blessed because you have nicer cars or nicer houses, or you have more things to send your kids to because you got 20 kids all in extracurriculars, whatever. I think that that's a complete misunderstanding of that. And if we did not speak to that, that's totally fair as a call out. And I agree that the prosperity gospel gets kind of stuck in the whole, like, blessing means that your life will be happier and more full of stuff. And that is completely incorrect and not based in biblical fact at all of what that understanding is. And so to talk, to kind of think about the last thing of like, if the world is bettered by people tithing and it shows faithfulness and therefore people will feel, will be blessed and will no longer be hungry, I don't think that's the situation at all. And I get that some people make that connection because it's a logical connection to make if you don't know the rest of the conversation and the story. And if we didn't speak about that, I can understand that.
Well, yeah, I mean the whole giving thing is a blessing to God's people. It's between God and His people. So we were going from the assumption immediately that okay, it's God and His people, because He also makes clear that hey, I don't want your money if I don't have your heart. I want your heart first.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we just kind of assumed all that without saying anything out loud.
Yeah. I actually I think that's a great distinction, and it goes back to like It's probably not right to think that like that. Trust me. Mm-hmm. Test me in this. I think it does apply, but it does not. It's not necessarily individual. Like we think about it as God's relationship. I think that's a great point. It's relationship to His people. Which interestingly enough, I think it does. Then you could have very interesting conversations with someone in Zimbabwe who like is giving and their situation is not changing. It feels hypothetical, roughly in this room, but like. There's the widow's mite is a relevant story, and Jesus talks about that. And so I think the those are good clarifications. Is that like how do we think of blessing correctly? It may not be either personal. It does not mean there's a conversely a punishment or something. Right. Although there is an impact to it. I think the recognition that if God says He's asking you, it's not because you didn't give the money. It's because you didn't trust Him. Like that's the implication. Right. The money was just the reality.
That's the tool.
It's
that's the vehicle at that moment.
Yeah. And like there is an implication of not trusting God. Like you're not. He's and I don't even know if it's. Although I think there are places in Scripture where He would actively be withholding something. But like there's just a natural consequence to not trusting your life to Yahweh, and that means you're making your own decisions. And the consequence of your own decisions are often rough. And so I think that's certainly a risk to you.
Okay.
All right, helpful clarification. Thanks, fellas.
How'd you get a hold of the complaint line?
That's I gave it a text at 515-517-0085. You know what's funny? I say that, what, three times the show, every show. It's probably not 10 years. I think we had the complaint line maybe 6-7 years now. I forgot the number.
That's awesome.
I thought I was looking for it in my phone as a contact. I thought I might have put LFTP complaint line in there, which you should do. And I'm like, I can't find it. What is that number? it took me 30 seconds to remember the complaint line. Anyway, 515-517-0085. Let us know how we've let you down or misunderstood the gospel and generally failed you. That is what the complaint line is for. We did not call it the give compliments to life from the path. Some of you have done that anyway, but yeah, feel free to complain. That's why we established it.
Call or text.
Yeah, call or text. All right. So we were talking about Mike, set up the conversation we were having earlier.
Oh yeah. Showing off that we got live from the path complaint line.
You guys both did it?
Yeah, I have it.
I
thought it was in. I think we have like Google contacts that get connected somehow.
Yeah.
Because we look at the same Life with Beth email.
Oh, yeah.
I have that contact in there, so I figured you did too, but apparently not.
Apparently not. Okay, Mike, what was the contact?
So we were tongue wagging on addictions or habits, disciplines. I don't know. All of them.
All of the above.
Yeah, there's a lot of words coming to big old bucket. Things that you do over and over again. We'll put it that way. Some of them for good and righteous glory to God, and some to whatever assuage your status in society, and for your own personal reasons that you just cannot tell yourself no to things. So we were talking about the difference between like substituting in new addictions for old addictions that are, quotes, bad or bad for your health, bad for your mental health, overall, you know, money waste. And you say, look, I got to stop these things. But when you turn around and replace them, is it okay to replace them with good addictions, or we'll say good habits that you determine to be good? Or is the whole thing a big old slavery chain? You're basically chaining yourself to something either way, and the thing that God is offering is freedom. And so we were just talking through the distinctions of that. Like a practical example would be, like when I used to smoke. I say that like I've been quit smoking for years. It's not in the years category, friends. So we could quit smoking, right? And then I think, well, I'm so used to having like this thing every five minutes out of every couple hours or whatever. So I got to find something to do with my hands. I got to find something to do, you know. And so like I start chewing gum or something. I chew a lot of gum. Or the reason it came up is they make these pouches out of coffee that are like tobacco pouches, but there's no tobacco in it. There's no nicotine in them at all. It's just coffee in a pouch.
It's like a chew pouch.
That's a chew. It's a chew pouch. It just happens to be full of coffee grinds.
Yeah, Dan says, is it equivalent to like a cup of coffee? Stick one in there.
Yeah, it's 25 milligrams of caffeine.
Ooh,
I don't know. I don't know what the normal cup of coffee is.
I think that's about
okay. Either way, so the point is
like a lot.
I was telling the fellas I got super excited because I went to the gas station and I have a hard time staying out of the buy one get one free box at the gas station. If I think something is buy one get one free, I think I got to have it. I can't let this go away.
You're losing 100% of your money if you don't get it.
Yeah. Nowhere. No other store actually does this apply to me. Shoes, socks, cars, tools. I don't go to buy one, get one free.
You don't get sucked in by BOGOs unless it's a gas station box unless next to the register.
That's right. If it's the gas station box with a handmade sign, I think they are desperate to get rid of this stuff. Oh, man.
I got They're a desperate to get rid of it. It must be the best stuff on the shelf, not the stuff that's been sitting there for four months.
It's not a pre-planned BOGO. It's a spur of the wind. We got to get this.
It was on a tee. Buy one, get one. Yes.
Wait a minute. Dan, you did a BOGO tenderloin?
Like last week, I was sitting in a nice establishment. I got a tenderloin. They're like, well, it's buy one, get one free today. Do you want the other one? I'm like.
That's a lot of tenderloin.
It's a lot. Yeah. And I'm like, I guess so. And I said, just put it to go, right? Because yeah. So I threw it away a couple days ago, but I feel really bad. But it's like reheated tenderloins. That's kind of.
I mean, it could have gone the other way, and you're like, I ate both of them right then and there.
Oh, I was going to say, take this to go. You have to eat them both right now.
Then it'd been like, nope.
Okay, yeah, sorry, just a quick list of the things I've bought from the buy one, get one free table at the gas station lately. The Dr. Pepper coconut flavor.
Yeah.
I hate them. The kids really seem to join. So they had fudge zingers. They're like Twinkies, but they're fudge.
I didn't know that was a thing.
They were expired, but they were probably going free. And the package already said bonus zinger. So I thought, I'm literally getting like four bonus zingers based on the ratio of buy one, get one free.
God's blessing me.
And those zingers were out. They'll outlast the cockroach.
This week. BOGO zingers.
Yeah, and then these coffee caffeine pouches that I picked up. Anyway, so the question is what I asked the fellas is there a problem with the way that I'm thinking about this, right? Like if I used to chew tobacco or used to smoke and I'm like, look, that habit's got to go. God was real clear about that. Those things got to go. But instead, I replace it with more things or different things. Mm-hmm. Is there a gain? Now, Ben brought up a good example because my grandma used to say this to us all the time, right? We used to say when I was a little kid, I would say, well, gosh, you know, and I wouldn't say God, right?
Yeah.
Use the Lord's name in vain. And my grandma would always go, you know, you wanted to say God, so gosh is just as bad. And I'm like, no, it is not. That is the reason I substituted it out. Right? Like, I didn't want to say that. And so I said, she goes, well, it sounds just like it. And I go, it does not sound just like it. Like, I purposely chose a different word so I would not use the Lord's name in vain. And to grandma, it's the same problem.
I was taught that too. And I always had trouble with that. Like,
yeah.
No, in my heart of heart, I don't want to say that.
Right,
so,
right. This is intentional.
Yeah. It's like when I drop a pot full of whatever on my foot and I go, beans, you know, like in anger. And people are like, you meant to FB. And I'm like, I didn't mean that.
No.
Like, obviously, I said beans.
I would have said that.
So, anyway, I've always found that to be tough to take in when my grandma said it. But is there some truth to it, right? Like, when I look at is the point that it's better for your health, it's cheaper in the long run, and you're getting off a habit that you shouldn't have had in the first place. It's detrimental for money and health reasons for sure. Now, let's look at these coffee whatevers, right? It's still detrimental to the wallet, right? There's no reason to spend money on this thing. But other than that, it's got caffeine in it, which, you know, is whatever it is. It ain't nicotine, you know? So the question is it a difference? Or is it a heart addiction problem? Is it being pulled to something? Whether it be, let's say, all the good addictions like soda, exercise, wintergreen coffee, whatever pouches. Can you be addicted to good things and it's still something that God is going to say, look, I'm trying to give you freedom from this?
Yeah. Oh, no. You can definitely be addicted to good things. Like something that is like on its face value is good, but like when used either.
Like drinking water.
It's too much. Yeah, or it consumes your life. You're not able to, you know, do things, keep things rightly and balanced because you're addicted to the thing. I think it's totally possible. I think the question is that like, what is the problem in your life the thing, or is it the addiction to the thing, or specifically, like, is it your inability to say no? Right. So like, I've had this. I went. I was going to the gas station too much. This is a common problem. And then I was trying to eat much better. And so what I thought was, is I can't cut all this stuff at once. And so I'm going to allow myself to go to the gas station. I just have to buy something that's acceptable to eat on the particular program, which is very few things I could do in there. But I set no dollar limit. I'm like, look, as long as you're eating well, you can spend as much money as you want to.
Buy a little cup of fruit for $20.
Yeah, and like whatever. But don't worry about the dollars because you can only focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah,
that worked. It was pretty sustainable for me. But the reality was is as I looked over multiple places of my life, I realized that like I don't say no to myself. Mm. I rarely, when presented in a situation, go, you know what? I'm going to pass on that. It might be at 10:30 in the morning. I'm tired, and I think to myself, I work from home. Maybe I could take a little nap. Like I don't need to take a nap. I got work to do, but I may not deny myself, and so I'll take a nap. Now, whether it's of any particular consequence to my job or the people I work for is irrelevant. The point is that like it's regardless of what the harm is perceived, I'm not saying no to myself. And that goes to the thing that I buy at the gas station. It goes to when I want to put something off, something I want to go do, and I decide that, like, oh, well, maybe it's okay. Maybe it'll move. Maybe I'll cancel this thing. Maybe I will – like as opposed to forcing myself to do something I don't want to do, I often just go, oh, yeah, well, let's do what I want to do then. And like – so it doesn't matter whether it's an apple or a brownie.
Right.
The problem is that I couldn't say no to either. And although it's better to replace the apple with the brownie, my core issue has to do with self-control. And so is it okay? Do I think it's okay if you're trying to get off smoking? And if in general you don't have a pattern of self-control problems, but the smoking's got a hold of me, is it holy and righteous to go cold turkey and borderline sinful because you swapped out the coffee packets? No, I don't think so. But if in general, if it's more of a pattern than that, if it's not just the smokes, if in general you're like you have a problem with self-control, then you have to exert self-control and the swap is irrelevant. Like you can't just keep eating apples until you believe it may become distasteful to you and you'll give up the apples. Because like you're just going to swap it back out eventually because you didn't establish the muscle and the grit that goes, I'm going to tell myself no.
I thought that about the smoking. I thought if I smoke enough of these, I'll just be sick of them.
No.
Turns out,
it's the exact opposite.
In fact, I seem to recall when we were maybe 20 or so, you and the man who was the lead singer in our band decided that you guys were going to quit smoking.
Yeah.
And so I think you smoked a carton between the two of you in hours, not days, and just said, like, if we're just going to make ourselves sick so that we won't want to smoke anymore because we got to get off the smokes. And that was successful, if I recall – for also hours. Like, oh, we feel so sick. We got to give this up. And then, like,
I had no wise people in my life to run these decisions by. What a horrible, horrible decision-making process.
I've tried that process with cigarettes, with food and with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of them went horrifically bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, I better have some more.
I literally, when I was trying to like figure out my relationship with food one time, like my dad and my dad was so well-intentioned in this, but it was such a bad idea. He was like, let's go do a challenge. Let's go do a food challenge. It was a burrito. It's like this 8-pound burrito. And he was like, here's the deal. We're going to do this food challenge. And if we do well, we eat this way forever because we obviously have a power and we can use it and we can make a bunch of money off this. He goes, but if we don't, like if it's nothing impressive or we can't make our way through it, like we're done. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, let's do this.
Oh, good.
We slammed these burritos, but in such an unimpressive time. Like he did his in like 17 minutes and it took me like 28, which means that he was sitting there for 11 minutes watching me finish this burrito. And like we both felt sick. It's probably 6-pound burrito if I remember correctly. It was enormous. And we looked at each other. We're like, okay, we can't do this anymore. Within a week, we were like, hey, man, you remember we did that awesome burrito challenge? We should probably do that again.
We should slay that burrito again.
And unfortunately, my father passed away like 3 months after that. So he didn't have to like hold on to that. I'm still kicking. It's been 15 years and I've done like 60 food challenges. Just stupid.
Just
and then my parents made
cream.
Me smoke a pack of cigarettes all in one go. And I loved every minute of it. I was like, this is friggin' great. I think I was maybe 13 sitting out back of our duplex smoking a pack of cowboy killers with my mom yelling at me the whole time. And I'm just like, this is what real men do. Like, friggin' ridiculous.
I wish that woman would be quiet, though.
Right.
I'm just
like,
trying to
is this
smoke.
What marriage is? I was like getting off the school bus, lighting up a red, and she only found out because she pulled up behind the bus one time off work early, and she looks at me, and I went, crap, and flicked the cigarette into somebody's yard, and then she told me to pick it up and show her, and I showed it to her, and she goes, fine, walk home the rest of the way. Now, when I tell you this was maybe 7 houses down, and the fury that I felt at the fact that my mother was not going to let me get in the car to be driven back to the house was worse than the shame that I felt for being a child smoking cigarettes in front of my mother. Okay, so, Ben, I agree with everything you said.
Did she go to the gas station and buy a brand new pack of smokes?
Or did she have one?
No. She had me smoke the whole pack that I had. I had like 4 packs in my house.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
You were rolling high.
I really was. I don't know. It was probably cigarettes were like $3.85 a pack still. This was still like 2006. But I think that you're absolutely right. I think I really appreciate the way that you're talking about the perspective of the self-control. Because that's such a big thing for me is a horrible relationship with self-control, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that not to say that this is the only way, but this is a different flip of it in my eyes is when I look at this stuff, I recognize that through my addictions, it's a freaking spotlight for me. Mm-hmm. It's a spotlight for me on where I don't trust God. Because when I look at that stuff, I think to myself, there's two reasons I run to something. I run to something because I'm in a high stress emotion situation, or I run to something because like it's yelling at me in my body. Like my chemistry is wanting that thing, whether it's food, whether it's alcohol, whether it's cigarettes, whether it's whatever it's been, right? A lot of the other addictions that people deal with. And like any time that I've taken a step back and looked at those things and go, what happens when I just bathe this in Jesus? Like I just go high stress, high scary emotion situations, whether it's friggin' trauma brain crap or whether it's just I'm stressed about work or whatever it is. Like what if I were to run to God with these emotions and trust him to do something with them? I feel like I would much less like to run to something that I currently do. Because that's exactly what happens to me is I go, I'm really stressed about something, or I'm angry about something, or I'm sad, or I'm whatever, or I'm having self-doubt, or I'm having identity issues, or all these different things. And they play out in this self-demolition that turns into this spiral that gets fed into addiction and then just goes horribly wrong. Or it's situations in which I've trained my body to need these things, whether it's chemical stuff like cigarettes that literally that's what they do, or whether it's food to where there's an emotional response for me because like food we need, but my body's taken food and turned it into comfort, not sustenance. And so I go, man, I'm having a really crappy day. You know what sounds good? A friggin' Baconator. And it's going to taste great, and I'm going to be super happy in the moment. And if I spotlight that and go, what about this is showing me that this is something I don't trust God to be able to handle? What is this showing me that I don't even try to run to God with this emotion? I don't try to let God be the one that fulfills this hole in my being or my heart or my mind or whatever it is. And that's where it hits me, because those substitutions for me are super dangerous. Because what I'm doing is, it's not necessarily just a, man, I have troubles telling myself no thing, because that's totally true for a lot of people and is also true for me. But mine is much deeper, where I go, it's not just I'm not willing to tell myself no, it's I'm terrified to go without the thing. And then if I take that, and instead of turning it over to God and going, God, you are the one who created me and knows me and loves me. You call me better than this. You call me saved and free of this kind of crap that exists in my life. But I'm not willing to trust you with this. So I'm just going to substitute it for something else. That's the danger I run into. It's not so much that it's just like, well, I'm substituting this because it's a better choice, whether it's cheaper, whether it's healthier, whether it's whatever. It's the fact that what I'm not doing is giving it to God and going, this is a space and a part of me that I don't trust you with, and I need you to do that for me. I need you to show up. I need you to cover this, and I need you to break my heart so I see this in your eyes, not mine.
I think we're creatures of habit, right? I mean, I have throughout the years intentionally told myself no in the areas of food and certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've had extended partial fasts,
yep,
right? And
yep.
I'll make them super restrictive. And I will not have any problem following that.
Yep.
However, I also learned over the years that I will find a loophole,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'll be like, okay, whatever, doesn't matter. No meat, no sweets, you know, no drinks, but water, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden I'm eating onion rings every day.
Yeah.
Because it fits. Because
it's on the list.
Because I can do it.
Yep.
Right.
So then I'll have to evaluate and say, now I'm killing myself because I'm not saying no, right? It's like, well, I've said no to all this stuff, so I must be a godly guy. I must be really super spiritual, right? But yet I'm not disciplined enough. So then I'll have to alter it. That's been like taking me years to do that, though. So I'll go 2 months in and go, okay, guess what? Now we're out fried foods, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'll find something.
Yeah.
So when I come up with that list, I have to look at what is going to be my substitute, and then I'll kill that one too.
Yeah.
But that's a... You do that your whole life.
This is hilarious, right? Because all I can see is a piece of broccoli smoking by a jukebox going, you'll come to me, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey.
You'll
sometimes
come to
that's
me
my
eventually.
Lunch.
Broccoli
and cauliflower in the microwave.
Now,
I'm good. No cheese. You know, yeah.
We got to get AI to make that poster. That's great.
You can't
avoid
broccoli
Dan,
forever.
I think because of a conversation that I had with you one time, I think I decided to do a Daniel fast.
Uh huh.
And like it went really, it was crazy.
They're powerful.
For like three or 4 days. And then the funny thing was. Like, but here's...
I think I'd say months or years or...
No, but admittedly, though, the flip of it was, is I was going from eating like 12,000 calories a day
to
that.
Yeah.
So even if I did it for a day, it was astronomical.
Yeah.
I did it for 4 days, and then I realized that, like, I was eating, like, rice and beans, and that was pretty much it for the most part, just to have, like, a complete protein, be full, and all this different stuff. And then I like, Googled a recipe to make... like flatbread, just something super simple, just flour, water, salt. That's it.
Yeah.
And I friggin' loved it. And so I kid you not, that day, my stand mixer was running for like an hour and a half as I'm making giant batches of this flatbread. And like I had a stack like I was a cartoon and it was a stack of pancakes. It was ridiculous.
And it fit in the fast. So you're like,
I'm
good.
I was like, I'm still good. I'm still like,
just like Daniel would do.
Look how spiritual I am.
And it was crazy to me because I didn't realize what I was doing at the time. I felt super holy. I was like, yes, I've given up food. And I'm like, this has been my big thing between God and I. And like, I'm praying to him and asking him to like bless the meal so that I don't feel sick to my stomach. And I don't want to eat crap. And then I'm like, but flatbread's fine. And then I'm like, but 38 slices of flatbread is just fine. Like, I had a roommate that was like, what are you doing? I was like, I guess I make bread now is what I do all day. And like, I had a stack.
I'm worshiping the Lord.
Right. I was like, I can't talk to you about it because then it's too much bloviate. Oh, it's too much putting myself out there. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I'm just making flatbreads. Freaking ridiculous, man.
You know, like, it occurred to me that I'd be willing to maybe embrace like a monk type lifestyle for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Because think of how often I practice not exerting control.
Right.
Yeah.
Like time after time after time, a swap is me going, no, I don't really have to. Like, the terms of suffer mean I don't have to go without for what? an hour, 3 hours. Like, hey, maybe I should just drink coffee at home. I could make it at home. I could bring it with me. I don't really need to buy it while I'm out and about. And, like, I'm actually all for living life. There's no reason to, like, totally go super restrictive. Like, live your life. Enjoy the life around you. But, like, you have to know where you stopped living life and life started living you.
Yeah, right.
And I would say, as embarrassingly, if I look across major parts of my life and existence, I largely do not exert control. I allow things I take what is an easy path, and it sucks because I'm getting away with it. Like, yeah. There's not a worldly consequence right. to it.
Yeah.
But within
it's
my
not
heart,
drugs, so it's fine.
That's right. But within my heart, I know.
Yeah.
I'm not exerting control over places where I should, and it's because for my last whole 20 years, I've practiced not exerting any control.
Now, call me out here if I'm misunderstanding part of scripture, and I'm perfectly fine being told that, but like, self-control is one of the fruits of the spirit, right? Mm. Okay.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Okay. Just
yep, yep,
sure.
yep, yep.
I feel like this one hits me hard. Because, like, exactly like I was saying, like, self-control for me is less about having some supernatural ability to just avoid stuff and more about just being full of God. And, like, the kinds of things that would try and bat at my self-control no longer have power because there's not these monoliths of things that I'm not filling with the presence of God or with the work of the kingdom or with the spirit within my heart, right? Like, I feel like those kind of things are just like, no. Drugs don't have power over me because I've got God. Alcohol doesn't have power over me. I don't have problems with the self-control anymore because I've got God to cover those kind of things that would have led me to those things. And, like, it just – again, for me, it just feels like this thing where, like, the lack of self-control is such a spotlight on, like, what I trust God with, and it's barely anything.
Yeah, or even – like, I think that's largely true. Like, for example, I think about – and Dan, I'd be curious to see what your experience has been in Zimbabwe. But Mike, I think about when we were in Ethiopia. Like, you and I both have issues going to the gas station, picking up random snacks and crap. Like, yeah. When we were in Ethiopia, like, there was no opportunity to
yeah,
do
yeah,
this thing.
Right.
And actually, my favorite thing, which is coffee shopping, I could not do because there were not decaf options and the bathroom potential in Ethiopia was not good, so I could not risk ordering coffee. It was a super bummer. But the reality was I didn't really have any problems. I didn't have problems saying no. I wasn't upset about it. I didn't miss all the randomness of going to the gas station. Like, idle hands and available resources caused me to make poor decisions. But in absence of those things, I actually don't miss a lot of these things at all. And so I think, to your point, like, there is a it gets nebulous for me, like, where I don't feel some sort of, like, spiritual overcoming to, like, sustain myself through a thing. But I do know, tangibly, scripture tells me that, like, idle hands are going to cause you trouble.
Yeah.
The places where I probably could give away some of my income so I didn't have it at my disposal to go do foolish things with it.
Here's the thing is, like, a lot of that, like, you can attribute to worship, right? Like, this is what worship looks like. You're like, God, I'll take this and I'm going to give it to you, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Either you take it away, you let me have it. I don't care, right? Like, whatever. I'm going to worship with the way that I live these things, right? Yeah. And the choices that I make. And, like, it was just funny. Like, you never do an inventory like this. And now that you do it, you realize that you are a cartoon character of a man.
Right.
I just realized that, like, if you ask my wife what I love doing, I love driving long distances.
Yeah.
It's my favorite, right? And I'm like, I don't care. Couple days, 14 hours, whatever. I really like driving. But if my wife, before we left the house, said, oh, don't worry, I packed a bunch of drinks and stuff, I would no longer want to go.
Yeah.
Like, I would be like,
all a trip for you is destinations in between gas stations.
Yep.
Yeah,
like, literally.
Or
like,
stretches of road between gas stations.
I don't
stops.
Want home Dr. Pepper cans. Gross.
Right.
I want 20-ounce Dr. Peppers kept at the gas station temperatures, not probably getting warmer as we drive down the road. This sounds terrible. I don't want to go anymore.
Which, all of this could be fixed by a cooler.
Yeah, see, we've had friends travel with us, and they're like, they'll come up with a cooler. I'm like,
nope.
No, I totally get it. I'm
still stopping for gas and pop.
You can ask anyone that knows me. I have a weird FOMO when it comes to regional fast food joints. Like, I literally, like, whenever we go on trips, I'm like, we don't have a Bojangles in Des Moines.
Totally.
I want to go there.
Oh, yeah,
I'm like, this food sucks. Like, Bojangles people, the Bowberry biscuit is weird. It's weird because you put like cinnamon roll frosting on it. Stop what you're doing.
Bojangles gross.
But yeah, it was not good, but I was like, I got to try it.
Yeah.
The friggin' mini corn dogs? I was like, yeah, buddy. No, I don't even like mini corn dogs, but whatever.
I feel this way about Kit Kat flavors.
Like
they come out with a new Kit Kat flavor, and I'm like, I gotta have it.
I'm actually the whole gas station. I'm FOMO'd the whole gas station.
Yeah,
and it's terrible because like, they came out with like a peach Pepsi, and like
I tried it.
I don't drink like
Iowa is a test market. For
I gave up caffeinated pop. Like I shouldn't drink caffeine, but I'm like, they don't make a decaf. Peach Pepsi. So, like, I tried
it. Caffeine-free peach Pepsi?
There's supposed to be some sort of, like, energizing cola. Like, Coke is making something. I can't remember what the description of the taste, but was, like, imbued with lightning or something.
Cola.
And I'm like, holy cats, I want to.
I got to have that.
Caffeine hurts you hardcore. It's like, yes, I want the extra caff.
But I will do it. And here's the reality. And, like, this is there's been parts of me that this feels like I joke about it, but it feels very serious to me.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that, like, there were times when, like, very clearly, conscious spirit, something goes, don't do that.
Yeah.
And I did it anyway. And I just chose to do what I wanted to do. And, like, there's been, like, the Lord and I have discussed where I can't say honestly, Lord, you've left me. Hey, no. He's every time. He's like, Ben, don't do that. This is a mistake. And I've pressed through. And I think if I'm willing to do that for some sort of lightning cola, how risky am I and all kinds of other things? I'm like, this is a heart problem. It has nothing to do with cola.
Here's the deal. I know I've told this story 25 times in this show. Friggin' Dave Herrick will always be the one that makes me angry in this space. Because of the fact that one time after this show, we drove away and I pulled into the quick trip gas station because I was getting ready to get like 20 hot dogs for myself and then stupid amounts of food. And then friggin' Dave Herrick pulls up behind me and just goes, hey, Boova, and then walks into the gas station with me nonchalant. And then follows me around the gas station as I lied to both him and myself as I grabbed an apple. I grabbed like a bag of carrots. I grabbed like a friggin' like a chicken wrap, which I've never bought from a Quick Trip once before, and then like a water with a flavoring to it. And I was like, oh boy, super excited for my after show meal. And Herrick's like, cool, as he's holding every item that I am also holding. And we buy it, and I even was like, oh, I'm really going to win this one. And I bought it for him. And he was probably like, yes, you are going to buy this. And so we had it. And then we walked outside, and I was like, so what's up, man? And he threw it away. And he goes, your turn. And I go, what? He goes, stop it. Throw that away right now. And I'm like, no, Eric, I can't throw food. This is good food. Like, it's healthy. And he's like, stop lying to me. Throw it away right now. And I tossed it in the trash. And then he was like, and don't stop at another gas station on the way home. And then he friggin' left me. And he went and got in his car, and he drove away. And he knew he didn't even have to stay behind to watch me not go back in the gas station. And so literally he's driving away, and I'm like, I'm going back in this frickin' gas station and getting what I wanted. And then it hit me. I was like, no, I can't do that. And so I got in the car, and I drove home. And I think I made it home and had like a glass of water and went to sleep on my anger. Like, that's what happened. And I think I yelled at him the next week for it. And I'm like, what the heck is wrong with you, man? But like, literally, he was like, I don't even know what it was. But he was just saying, like, just don't substitute.
Yeah.
Don't lie here. Just don't do it. Like, say no.
Yeah.
And walk away. And I was like, this is such a thought to me that I can't even fathom what you're talking about. And I wanted to hit him.
Yeah.
Like, I love Dave Herrick. I would take a bullet for him. But I was ready to punch him in the face in that moment.
And I think,
and I'm like this power over me is insane.
Well, that's what got me thinking about the monk lifestyle. Because, like, the reality is think of how implicitly – what it means implicitly that you've defined suffering in your mind. Saying no to all that crap.
Yeah.
Me going, I'm going to not buy the cola that I shouldn't.
Right.
I'm going to not take the nap even though I'm a little bit tired. Like, my definition of what it is like to persevere, think of the harassment we've given the generations around us. Like, these people got no grit. I'm getting beat up by a soda. It's preposterous.
Yeah, I have no grit.
Really? And so, like, I just chose other ways of which, like, I established my grit. But, like, I'm getting whooped up by the gas station or by
a food choice that I shouldn't make, or by a random thing that showed up on the TV that I looked at for another 10 seconds that I shouldn't have. Like, this is what I'm getting beat up on, and it's stupid. Yeah. And it's not acceptable.
Right.
And so, like, although there are paths for substitution, so, like, I think there are totally ways of which this can work. I think you need to do a really, really hard heart check and go, look, am I substituting? Because the only thing that really – the thing that I'm getting beaten up was price. It wasn't really having a health problem. It wasn't really a heart issue. It was just a price problem, and so I got the generic whatevers.
Sure.
Fine. But, like, I would venture a guess that at least half the time that we believe it's worth a swappy, it's you got to let it go because you have a heart problem. And, frankly, it's a thing that gets in the door. And once you are allowing yourself to go down that path of not saying no to things you should say no to – there's a whole table that temptation can set in front of you that go, well, then don't say no to this, and then don't say no to this. And then once you get the broad table, now you start moving up to deeper tables and bigger banquets, and you're going to end up in a position you don't want to be.
Right.
And so would you
put this in a category of a discipline? Like it's something that you have to teach yourself through the power of the Holy Spirit and prayer to do. Like you basically need to subject yourself to it. To learn how to do it, you're innately
not
good at
this. Like how
to say
no?
Yeah, like
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I'm trying to figure out is like if someone goes, yeah, I have this problem. I probably got 50 things on the list you're talking about, and mine are unique and whatever.
Yep.
How do I start figuring out how to let God handle this and how to discipline a no into my life?
When you talk about like the traditional spiritual disciplines, what comes to mind is the simplicity. That simplicity is saying no. Like I don't need all the extravagance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need 49 coffees and flavors, and I don't need this and that and onion rings, and I just need what I need to survive and be good. You know, and content. And that contentment is hard.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
I mean, we're continually given images of things that would be better. This would be a better than your wife. This would be better than your car. This would be better. You know, I mean, there's all that's where temptation comes from, I think. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Actually, it's so interesting. That word keeps coming back. We talked about this on the show, I want to say like a year ago, that like one of the first things that's going to help you give more is have contentment. Because then your money's not chasing other things. Like when you're content with your life, you'll have money to give.
Yeah.
But like, but it's the same problem to Dan's point with like the things that are tempting you. If you are content with the water I got at home and the soda, I even have soda at home. Like, I mean, I don't, but hypothetically you might.
Yeah.
But
it's
like
not the peach pips.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the things we have to be contented with are ridiculous. And we're still like, oh no, but I have to have it come to the gas station. I have to have the Guinness on tap. I have to, whatever the things are.
Right.
You know? So where we are praying for contentment and to delight in contentment, some of these things stop being temptations. I do think you're going to have to – actually, the scenario you brought up was interesting to me because generally I was thinking around people who are trying to swap out instead of say no. But what if you're a person that doesn't say no to like 10 things? So like is – again, now that we're talking to cold turkey, can you realistically cold turkey 10 things? Here's what I'm going to say is you could try but like it is a practiced thing. And so like you're going to get better at saying no when you start saying no to anything.
Yeah, I don't know that you need to take on the Ninja Warrior course right out the gate. Why don't you figure out how to do the bicycle uphill thing first?
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll work on the jump
and
the tire.
Prove to yourself you can make the changes. Like it's such a momentous thing that like when you're able to show off that like yesterday I made stupid choices and today I made 10 less stupid choices. Still made stupid choices, but I made less of them. Or yesterday I was eating this or I was drinking this or I was doing this, but I'm doing less of it today. Like you can celebrate small wins in that and you don't have to go nuts. I had a guy I used to work with that like the way he would quit stuff is he would quit 5 things and then he would start bringing back in the other 4 things that he didn't really want to quit so that it didn't seem as bad. And I'm like, what? But then every 3 months we would have the same conversation where he's like, I'm back on everything. And I'm like, yeah, you are. Like, I'm not surprised by that. Like,
I'm back on
him. Right, exactly. Like, I gave up meat, I gave up football, I gave up drinking and cigarettes and this, and all I really wanted to give up was cigarettes. So I'm getting done with that. And then 3 months later, we're out in the smoke shack together. I'm like, what's up, Larry? I see you got the smoke wagon again. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, like, for clarity, if it's sinful, you need to stop it, like, directly.
Right.
Although, you know, have some grace for yourself, but, I mean,
Seriously, you got
to don't be slow rolling separation
that's
from God. That,
totally
you need
fair.
To cut that off, right?
Yeah.
I think the other, like, if we're looking at practical next steps kind of things, like if you're in this situation or you know, liking yourself to this at all, one of the things that's helped me immensely over the last couple of years in any moments is, like, when my heart's not right, but when the human part of my heart is not right on this kind of stuff, but, like, there's that voice in the back of my head, whether it's spirit or whether it's someone around me that's going, like, hey, man, this has got to stop. And I can recognize that. The first prayer I usually have is, like, Lord, I need you to just bend my heart mm-hmm. and my mind and my will to yours. And I want to see with your eyes, and I want to, like, hear with your senses and stuff. Like, my heart's not broken for this, and I still want to continue this, even though I know it's wrong. I need you to break my heart for that. And, like, those humble moments of, like, going, I'm not even in a place enough to be able to want holiness. And that's a problem for me. So you need to break down sin in my heart somehow. And, like, it doesn't work every time because it's still me being human a lot of the time. But, like, God still works through that kind of stuff. And those kind of conversations start with, like, I need you to break me so that I can start seeing things through your perspective. I want to see my sin the way you see it. And then following that up with scripture and being around people that can talk to you and speak into your life and know sin in your life and being accountable to them. Like, there's the reason that all this community stuff works together to go, like, you can't tackle it alone. And God knows that. And he's willing to set up a lot of things for you, whether it's stuff with him personally or whether it's stuff with the people around you, like surrounding yourself with good people.
Yeah.
There's ways to kick this stuff. You don't have to be in sin forever.
Yeah, and I would say obedience is victory, man. And so, like,
agreed.
Sometimes what your heart wants, if your body says no, even though the thing's on your mind, like, you still won. Like, there's, in fact, even scripturally, like, Paul's talking about beating your body into submission. Like, he recognizes that sometimes, like, stuff's going to be out of place. FOMO's going to show up. You're going to have – and so, like, take small victories. It's if you're working on your mind and your heart, like, if you can win your body for that moment, it's going to improve. And so, like, don't beat yourself up. It's like, oh, I really wanted it. Even though I said no, I still wanted it in my heart. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how it goes. But, like, you did say no. And so take the victory.
Welcome
and we'll work it through. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. Curious, is this helpful? Anything we missed? Stuff that you would suggest? General complaints about the show are all fine. 515-517-0085. That's the Bob Eisenhower Live from the Path complaint line. You can call or text, and we'd love to hear your feedback on this particular bit. And let us know if it's something we can be praying for you on. This has been on my mind for a while now, and I think are talking through it tonight. I've got some clear things that I just, like, they have got to go.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if it would be helpful to me to establish some sort of, like, very monkish pattern for just, like, some sort of time to go, look, you've got to, like squeeze the muscle on saying no, and then you can allow, like, I'm the guy. I'm going to allow back in. But, like, I just don't practice near enough on saying no to things, and it's too broad for me to tackle it like piecemeal. So anyway, that's for me. If that's for you and we can be praying for you on that, let us know.
You should take cold showers. If you can do that, you can do anything. Only a caveman does weird stuff like that.
That Gary Goggins guy or what, David Goggins guy?
Who's David Goggins?
I don't think about other men in showers like that. Who are you thinking about?
He's just the cold plunge kind of guy. He's like, you can change everything in your world if you just stop being an idiot and start just doing the thing. Who's going to row the boats? Have you heard that guy?
No, he seems very inspirational.
Yeah, you would love him, and he's the worst.
Who's going to row the boats?
And here's the deal. Just in case anyone ever gets that clip out in the world, he would hate me, and I'm okay with that.
Why would he hate you?
Oh, he would look at me and go, you're a fat piece of crap, and you are lazy, and all you are is just a complete pile of your own failure.
It's because you take hot showers like a sloth.
I do take cold showers. I freaking love cold showers.
You have no grit.
You got no grit.
You got no grit. Who going to row the boats?
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I have been close to my sister for most of my adult life. When my daughter Patricia was born, my sister created the nickname Patzilla. A combo of Patricia and Godzilla.
Really? Thank you for that explanation.
I was wondering where that came from.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. I told her I did not like that name, and she stopped saying it for a while. Now she's doing it again, and I'm deeply hurt by this. It's not an association I want my child to have for herself, and it comes across as mean. Since my first expression of not liking this is being ignored, I'm not sure how to proceed.
Have the conversation again. Yeah. Like you said, it's been a while. Sometimes people screw up again. And then you got to go, like, hey, man, we kind of talked through this. Like, stop. And no. They go, you're right. I did stop for a while, and then I started it back up again. I'm sorry.
Is the association really that dangerous?
No, I don't think so. But like
she's going to grow up with the complex that she's a giant lizard? Like, what is the – I don't understand what the
I'm going to destroy cities.
This was,
I'm the product of an atom bomb.
I eat buildings.
Right. This was spoken over me as a child.
I will fight King Kong.
I don't get it.
Oh, if only I didn't have these scales and plasma cannon.
Man, like, I've been a
cartoon of a human being. You're right, but still.
I've been in a, I don't know what it is, a terrible mood lately where I just have no patience for stuff like that. Like just stop it. Just quit. Stop being a stupid. I mean,
yeah.
You're being a real Dan Ziller right now.
I know. I'm a terrible human being at
and
times.
And that's a combination of Dan and Godzilla. In case you weren't sure.
Yeah, Dan this Kong. Would be this would be awkward, right? She's like, I don't know if you remember, but I don't really like you calling my daughter Patzilla.
And then child's the woman goes, fine.
So you've said.
Right.
Right. I hear. Yeah. Noted.
Okay.
I guess you don't get to be around Patricia any longer.
Okay. So here's the thing. It's like parents do have the right to be quirky.
Yeah.
They can be quirky if they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I out of kindness. Like, change it to patty cake or something. I don't care. Figure out some other thing to call these all this poor child.
Pat Sajak.
I don't care.
Is it better if it's closer genetically to your species?
Hippopotamus.
No, not a pet man. So, like, whatever. Here's the thing. As much as I think the parents are ridiculous, I would suggest that, like, is this the most important thing in the world? That you call this kid Patzilla. Like,
I mean, I would recommend it. She backs up, but her advice is for her, right? Or wait, what was she asking?
This is the offended party.
Patzilla. Yeah, the mom.
Okay, yes. First advice is to you let this go. You're being ridiculous. That would be my first advice. Yeah, but if I'm on the other side
of
it.
Yeah, if I'm on the other side, just
let it go.
Or do it when she's not around.
This is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life, and I'm so mad that you came up with that. Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, she'd find that offensive. Okay.
Dan, would you be upset if you found out that I call you Danimo the animal from time to time?
I could give a rip. I mean, cool beans.
Just checking.
Life is so, there's so many real issues out there to get so caught up on some silly little surface thing.
Yeah.
And I get it, like I say, moms can be extra sensitive. I understand. But man, toughen up. I mean,
admittedly, as someone of the larger variety, you can be called way worse than Patzilla.
Yeah. And she will be at school. That's what I was going to say. Her people at school are going to call her everything you can imagine.
Yeah. Patzilla is an awesome nickname, actually. Like, when it comes to what you could be called, I'd put that on my jerseys. That's awesome. Yeah, call me Patzilla, baby. Let's do this. Yeah.
She's not Patzilla.
Think twice before you call me that
my
other
daughter
name.
Is beautiful and not reptilian.
She is only 4.5 feet tall, not the 27 stories like you're saying.
I don't know if you've noticed that she is not actually a prehistoric lizard, but she's not.
She says more than...
Has bad breath.
Here's the deal. Start calling your sister Mothra. That's what you do. You go, if she's Patzilla, then you're Mothra.
She's very kind to Asian people. I think you have this wrong.
Oh, no.
Hey, you had 5 seconds to dump it.
No, I thought
and not say that joke. And you did it anyway.
You didn't tell yourself no.
And you waited till the crowd came down. You're like, I'm going to tell this Chinese joke.
Batter up.
Lunge.
I feel good about it.
Patzilla.
Patzilla. Okay, here we go. Segular says, the question was, since my first expression of not liking this is being ignored, I'm not sure how to proceed.
Oh, gosh.
Segular says, your sister has a peculiar sense of humor. There are sweet nicknames, and Patzilla is not one of them. In fact, it's rather mean and sinister.
Sinister?
Wow.
What?
Of the nature of sin. Sinister.
It's quite nefarious and mischievous of her to call her that.
How to proceed would be to not expose your child to anyone who ridicules her or calls her a name you don't want her to have.
Oh, cut her off.
Enjoy Bubble Boy.
Yeah. Aunt Susan's out. She called you Patzilla one too many times, and I had to lay the law down.
Jimmy called me fat again at school, Mom. Well, guess we're moving school districts again.
Nobody makes fun of hippopotamus.
You're my little hippopotamus. Oh, wow. All right.
Here's the problem with freedom, friends. Like, it gives you
freedom.
It gives you
a terrifying way to start a sentence.
This is our society has produced this because it gives you the freedom to screw your kid up in whatever way that you see fit. And you, I love you. I think your heart is in the right place, but you are missing completely the forest for the trees. Your goal is to raise a kid so they can figure out how to live when they leave your presence.
Exactly. To be resilient.
And all you're doing is creating walls around a child, so once they leave, or maybe never leave your place, they get run over by a Mack truck instead of slowly learning how to do it over a lifetime.
Right. There's a difference between like exposing your kid to fire over and over again so they get some nice calluses and thick skin, and then just allowing them to be in the world and recognize that not everybody's going to be super nice all the time.
Yeah.
And so that the first time that they get made fun of or talked to sternly isn't when they're 20.
Yeah, right. Your kid should come home from school and go, "Those boys are mean to me."
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's how you deal with that. Yeah.
Let's talk about let's talk about the ways that your identity is not affected by that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the ways that you can react to that stuff constructively or not react at all and just develop thick skin in a good way. Let's move on from that.
Yeah.
You want to do one more?
Yeah, one more.
I haven't pre-screened this one. Let's see how we do. Dear Life from the Past.
I call my sister Patzilla.
My husband has a 36-year-old daughter from a one-night stand. For the last 2 years, she has been wanting to meet his family, aunts, and uncles.
Mm-hmm.
She has met them all except for our own children, her half-siblings. Our children are adults and don't want a relationship with her. She wasn't part of their life when they were growing up, and now she's calling their father dad. I feel awkward as well, knowing my husband knew about her and wanted nothing to do with her when she was younger. His family has accepted her and is pressuring our children to accept her and let her hang out. Are we wrong for not wanting to act like one big family? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm misunderstanding the grounds. Hey, we didn't know her when she was younger, and so that's why we don't want to know her now.
Right.
I only love people I've known for approximately 40 years.
This seems like a cartoon that was painted pretty poorly. Like, in what situation? Like, fine. If you want to be that way, that's fine. It's weird that the other side of the family is like, you guys better accept that person. But it's also just a human being. Like, she hasn't done anything wrong to you. I wonder if there's, like, more stuff going on about their relationship with dad that, like, makes them worried about a half-sibling that's coming out of nowhere.
I mean, the dude,
there's
first of all,
possible considerations here, but yeah, you're right. You're ridiculous.
It sounds like the guy, like, it's pretty crappy. Like, the dad knew she existed and wanted nothing to do with
her. He made a mistake for 18 years.
But then
36.
Like, the wife says, well, she wasn't part of my children's lives when they were growing up, and now she's calling their father dad. He is her dad.
Yes,
right.
Her dad.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's not an infactual thing to do.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's
an infactual thing to do.
Agreed, it's a shock, but like your animosity or your frustration should be with your husband.
Yeah.
Like, he created this scenario. He pushed this gal out so she grew up with no father, right? And, like, all of a sudden she wants back in their life, and then you're mad at her? Like, she's got to pay the penalty
for
this dude?
Where is your perceived threat coming from? That, like, this is a scary situation.
You're ruining
that,
our family or
right,
something.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a situation in which the unknown daughter from a one-night stand is trying to come around. She's a human being. She's an adult, and you're all adults.
You're sheer blood.
Right. Like, I mean, you're all adults.
I'm
kind of
curious, wouldn't you be? I mean,
have
a little bit.
Have a conversation. No.
Yeah.
If she's a terrible human being, and that's why you don't want her around, I can understand that.
Right.
But it's just the fact that it's this looming 36 years ago one-night stand that everybody's just super worried about it, that's a weird fragility in your family structure that you're all super scared at this.
I mean, by the way, all of you were one-night stands. Just you happen to be with the same person, you know, night after night. But
I have never looked at a family like that before, Dave.
I'm just saying.
Okay, so
Dad was a little frisky.
Hippopotamus was going to be the shirt for this week, but you're all one-night stands. I feel like takes the cake.
With no context.
That's so.
But she's like, what?
That's embroidered polo.
Yeah, so like here, you're worried that she's trying to horn in. She was left out.
Yes, exactly.
Like she's writing, she's trying to write a situation,
right,
not cause one.
What a beautiful reconciliation possibility.
Yeah, the dude, this is entirely this man's fault.
Yep.
He needs to rectify. He needs to bring the peace. He needs to write the relationships. He needs to
talk to his kids.
Yeah.
This is my fault. I would appreciate if you show some kindness to this person. And frankly, I would say, look, I'd be disappointed if you didn't. Like her mistakes are not like my mistakes are not her, and they're not her mistakes. She is not a mistake. What I did was my fault, mm-hmm, and that has nothing to do. And like whatever, I'm not asking you be best friends, but like this is your family, and I expect you to treat her like that.
What a great opportunity. Yeah. Teaching time.
Yeah. Too narrow, homie. You got it wrong.
Secular says
that's a bumper sticker.
The question was, are we wrong for not wanting to act like one big family?
Yeah.
Yes.
Secular says, if there's a victim in this scenario, it is the daughter your husband denied for so long.
Nice job, Secular.
Although the situation isn't something you are thrilled with, the young woman is part of the family. This isn't the 1950s. The circumstances of her birth are not a reason for her to be ostracized. Secular might be carrying a torch from trouble, but back in the day.
True.
Just think of the fun spice you could bring to the Thanksgiving potluck dinner. A new item that no
one
has had.
You want half a loaf of bread?
You were the worst.
I said that Asian
thing? I was going to call him out. Don't worry about it. That was rough.
The half-sibling thing.
I understand why you... No, nobody's confused about
half
the
a brownie?
Joke. It wasn't so cerebral that it went over our heads.
Everybody could laugh at it together for making a joke of themselves being so serious. It'd be comedy.
The absolute sign of comedy, you having to make that noise at what you said. This is awful. That has got to be one of the top 10 best responses of Secular, though. Of like flat out actually calling out the problem. Yeah. That does not happen often.
It doesn't sound like the advice comes from the same person. Like just a second ago, they're like, "You put my kid Patzilla. You cut the rocks. You will not be coming around here."
You let go of anyone who's hurting your Patricia.
Or they'll say, "Call the police."
Yeah,
you should go to divorce counseling. It's not a marriage situation. Still, you should probably get divorced.
Yeah, and then call the police.
And then call the police on them.
This man divorced me.
You better hire yourself a lawyer, bucko.
I got half a mind to call the police.
That's wrong. Dear. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. For any number of reasons, the Life for the Path complaint line is 515-517-0085. We would love to hear from you. Call or text.
You stepped into that one.
Yeah, please let us know. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.